It's an honor for me to introduce our first lightning talk speaker, Vlatko, and he talks about OpenVAS. The stage is yours.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me well. I'm Vlatko. I'm one of the developers on the OpenVAS project, so I will talk about OpenVAS. But first, I think you all remember the Nessus, which was one of the most popular security scanner out there. But it was free once, and it was popular once. So they decided to close it, and I don't know, even if we ask, for example, the wisest person what he have to say, this is something what he will say. So even he asked why you want to do such thing when everything is going to from closed to open source, of course. Even the Gartner say that even in year 2012, 80% of code will be open source. So we actually, as a user, don't have too much choice. That's their choice. But we can actually choose whatever we will use that later or not. So this is how OpenVAS became. It was probably you remember it from the Genesis. That was the old name. Now it's called OpenVAS, and it's Nessus GPL fork. It actually continues open development of vulnerability scanner, but actually it follows its own path, so it's you can expect it will break some compatibility with Nessus in the future, of course, as today. So currently we released a 2.0 release, which you can download from the website, and you can use it immediately. This is some quick facts from those who are familiar with OpenVAS already. For example, it's not just Debian local checks. I know some people think about it. You have checks, local checks for popular BSD operating systems, Linux distros, Windows, and even Solaris in experimental phase. There's also some talks that it misses some SMB function classes, but actually it's just rewritten to suit better the needs. So you just need to rewrite the old GPL plugins to have this. We have rewritten most of it, but not all of it. So you can help us to rewrite it. So this is a 2.0 release. It was released just a few weeks ago. It features OWL support, new protocol, so it's not compatible with Nessus clients anymore. And some of 46, 64 bits and so on. Also, we got some integration from Nessus, like NumUp integration, Hydra, Nikto, and so on. But we also integrated more tools, for example, like iKeyscan, PortBunny, and so on. I think that's all popular software which you can use with OpenVAS. Also, it's not just NASL checks anymore. You have NASL, which we got from Nessus, but you can also check the vulnerabilities with OWL. It's implemented in 2-point releases, so you can use OWL definitions to check for your vulnerabilities. Also, we are planning to implement NumUp scripting engine, so you can scan everything from the OpenVAS itself. You can see from the bottom how it looks when it checks for OWL checks. This is some of the design changes. There will be OpenVAS manager. This is the old state, current state, but this is the new state which we plan to have OpenVAS manager, which will handle the sessions. So actually, you could disconnect the client when you are scanning and then do the trick. So this is something I got from yesterday. Author of Metasploit implemented OpenVAS, integrated Metasploit and OpenVAS. You can see it here. And this is it. OpenVAS needs you. This is the web page. This is my email. Feel free to contact me. This is it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Vlatko. Next is Michael Dietrich. Please come on the stage. We don't have to need to call you. Please come as fast as possible because time is money. So if the second speaker always could go on the stage when the last minute is running, that would be nice. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, all speakers be first row and know what the, who is the speaker before you, so we get a fast change there. Thank you.
Okay. Time is running.
Hi, I'm Michael Dietrich. I'm working on Pineo. It's a software stack for a mobile device. When I started using my phone, I often missed several functions, like supporting me in my life. Assistance, like in the term PDA, wasn't there. I need something for reminding me to buy something, to check my bank account, to whatever. So if you start as a developer to implement something, you are completely in a sandbox. You can do Symbian development, which is a jail. You can try to do Java, which is even worse. You can use Qtopia, which isn't much better. The Qtopia build system is very close. It's a shell script of thousands of lines. If you try to change the main screen of a Qtopia-based device, you have to get into this shell script and change the main program that's running. It's not possible to do the thing I wanted to do. So the Neo arrived, which is much better because it's clean, it's modular built, and it was the first time that I could change stuff in there. But the Neo came nearly without any software. You have a booting program, you have a Unix-like kernel with Linux on it, but that's it. You have no daemons for any functionality that's provided by the device. There's no foundation to use GPS, the GSM modem, the GPRS in there. So that was a point where I wanted to use all this hardware in this device and had to start developing stuff. So I developed the Muxa, which makes it possible to use the GSM modem for several things at the same time, so you can use GPRS while getting SMS delivered. Then I did a GSM daemon, all the low-level work to issue a call, to get an SMS, to send SMS, to get the SIM phone book, and so on. I did a GPS daemon on my own, and then I struggled a little bit. Point is that I had difficulties to build this whole stuff and had to choose which libraries to use. So the open source world has a lot, like the Enlightenment world with the Ease, Edge, Etika, whatever. You can do this whole stuff with WebKit, with Dbus, with DirectFB, and it was a big roulette to get the right libraries to implement all this. So I decided for Dbus, which makes the main part of it, and Dbus is a very nice thing to plug all those daemons I made under the bus, and you can provide a graphical user interface or even an NCurses interface.
30 seconds.
Oh, no tone. To check that. The point is in Pineo that Dbus objects have abstract interfaces, so there's an interface to be powered. You can switch on off any device you have. There's an interface for location providing. You can ask several different daemons for your location. So if you have a GPS device, this one would be the best. If you have not, GSM is another one. The location of the cells is known. You can ask Google for that. Also, the time is something several devices can do, like GSM has time, GPS has very accurate time, and so on. Even the sun could be used to get the time. And in Pineo, you have a complete cut between GUI and functionality through Dbus. Even getting maps from OSM is below. It's not in the GUI part, it's in the Dbus part. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I really like your slides. I really like your slides. Slides don't have to be ugly. Thanks. Ah, okay. Okay. So, next one is Matt. He talks about Yakety Stats, I hope I pronounced that right. Okay, it's like Yakety Yak. Okay. Yesterday you told us that it's the new blue screen of Windows 7?
Yeah, the 3D one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you were in a holographic session yesterday night, you saw the beta version of Windows 7. Yeah, that's why we wanted to have one single machine. The organization of that machine had a little bit of problems, so we still have this mess up with all presentation speaker machines, as we can now witness. And the time is running. Yeah, that's why we wrote in the wiki to send us the slides, the PDF, or as we write, Lightning Talks usually don't need slides, but if you really, really need one, send them to us. That didn't happen. We had no deck numbers. We had not from every speaker, we hadn't the email address, so we couldn't ask for the slides, and yeah, that's always a problem. Okay, here's the microphone. Your 4 minutes are running now. Nice light.
Ja, ich möchte heute Yakety Stats vorstellen. Entschuldigung, dass es jetzt ein bisschen gedauert hat. Ja, Yakety Stats ist sowas Ähnliches wie Moonin, nur finde ich es etwas besser zu handeln. Und zwar kann man dann eben nicht nur, man hat keine statischen Graphen, die einmal erstellt werden oder wohl Bilder, die einmal erstellt werden, sondern die RRD-Daten werden gesammelt auf dem Server und die Graphen werden dann in der Web-GUI erstellt, quasi Moonin Web 2.0, wenn man das so sagen will. Ja, ich will das hier mal zeigen, zum Beispiel jetzt hier mit einem Notebook. Ja. Okay, so. Ich kann hier, muss man gerade mal doch ein bisschen runter. So, ich kann hier auch in die Graphen reinzoomen, wenn mich jetzt irgendwas genauer interessiert. Na. Jetzt. Na. Jetzt. Murphy's Law. So. Ja. Ich glaube nicht so wie gewollt. Ja, also normalerweise ist es jetzt so, dass ich eben in diese Graphen reinzoomen kann. Ich kann, das sieht jetzt aufgrund der schlechten Auflösung jetzt nicht, ich kann Linien ausblenden, ich kann die Linien ändern zu Stacks, ich kann Areas definieren, wenn ich so größere Bereiche habe. Ich habe verschiedene Linientypen, ich kann die Beschreibung ändern. Das sieht man jetzt vielleicht hier. Ja. Die Zeiten kann ich definieren, entweder hier praktisch 4 days ago, 4 hours ago oder und der Graphen wird eben dann entsprechend immer generiert. Es werden keine Bilder vorgehalten, die dann vielleicht später eben wieder verworfen werden. Lines. Ich kann hier, hier sieht man es genau, ich kann eine Area definieren. Hier eine Area. So. Man kann auch Einzellinien, die jetzt eben nicht benötigt werden, sagt man, okay, komplett ausblenden. Nein, soweit ich weiß nicht. Also die Software ist jetzt seit Mitte Oktober released. Die war wohl in der Universität in Georgia schon jetzt ein paar Jahre in Betrieb, aber nur intern in Gebrauch, und sie haben das jetzt als Open Source Software umgesetzt, also freigegeben. Und man merkt ab und zu schon noch ein paar Haken und Ösen, aber im IAC klappt die Kommunikation eigentlich ganz gut und Probleme werden auch relativ schnell gefixt. Übertragen wir das Ganze von einem Client aus als HTTP Post. Fertig? Okay, nachgucken kann man auf jekyll.org. Dort ist auch im IAC oder Link zum IAC, Feature Request, Dokumentation, Sourcen zum Download. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Next year you will have more luck with the Beamer, I think. Yeah. Okay, next one is Richard. He talks about FSPOI, and I hope he has more luck with the Beamer.
Thanks a lot. As you can read on the slide, my name is Richard, and I'm going to give a talk about a small, fast, flexible, real-time file system activity monitoring tool. You might think, oh, it sounds a little bit like FAM or like some other tools, or you can also use something like Tripwire to do the same stuff, but as you will see in the following slides, and as you can see if you download the tool, it's just a standalone binary without any dependencies to your system. It runs on Linux, which means, yeah, you need a Linux system, and you only can monitor the file system of a Linux system, and not of a Windows or Solaris or any other system right now, but we are working on porting it. It's called FSPI, which means File System Spy or File System Activity Monitoring Tool. It's based on the newly introduced iNotify interface, which got implemented in the Linux kernel since 2.6.13, I think, which released at the end of 2005. I started coding on this one exactly 2 weeks after I read about it on the mailing list. So this code is code of about 2.5 or 3 years now, and it's mostly a patchwork code right now. So it's a proof of concept. There will be a stable release, hopefully, sometime. As I told, implemented there. Why? I already said something about it's small, it's fast, and has nearly no dependencies, but yeah, why do you need something like that? That's because if you are a security professional or if you're working for a company and doing security consulting and you are at the customer, you're most of the time not allowed to install any software. So with this, you can just plug in your USB memory stick onto a server and execute the binary directly from the USB stick. There is no need to install or modify anything on the system. And then you can watch all activities in real time happening on the file system. It's completely opt controlled, which means there is no configuration file needed, there is no library needed, there are no text files or any other configuration stuff needed. You can just completely control it with the help of its command line options. Yeah, I already said that. I know it's too small to read, it's just a quick overview of all the options implemented right now. There are a lot of different stuff like diffing features, which helps you to spot the differences happen on the file system, and also filtering features and stuff like that. A normal run looks like that, and to have a closer look, here we see just a small part of a log, and they discovered that, for example, the while log message got changed, size got changed, so it highlights this one. The output format is completely configurable. That means you can specify everything you want to see here in the output format, and you can also apply your own custom strings and stuff like that. So it's a completely dynamic output functionality where you can design your own outputs for using in shell scripts or other tools. In this example, you can also see that there are two changes at the while log directory itself, so it highlights both, of course. Yeah, it can be used for all different kinds of stuff. For example, application testing, besides using S-trace or on Mac or other systems, probably D-trace. You can also use something like that to really easy and fast and also system resource conservative monitor all the stuff an application does on your file system. Thank you. You can do the normal system monitoring stuff and a lot more. We can talk about it later on. Warning, this is a proof of concept code, as I already said. So you can get it from here, from this website. I think you can find the URL within the wiki. Yeah, thanks a lot. Those are my contact details. I provided the proof of concept. Yeah, the rest is up to you. Thanks a lot.
So our next speaker is Stefan, and he talks about freeing rainbow tables.
Yeah, as you see, this talk is about freerainbowtables.com. I'm just going to say a few words about the project, since the project leader isn't here to do it. This is just a website for a distributed computing project, and we compute rainbow tables. You will also see the project URL here. Well, this November, the project switched to the Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing because the project leader Powerblade estimated that development of the GUI just wasted too much office time and that wasn't desirable. The switch was pretty smooth, and we now already have clients for Windows, Linux, 32 and 64 bits. The tables generated are in an indexed format. They are smaller and faster to search through than traditional ones. Each part of a table is just 600 megabytes. And so far, we created tables for MD5, LM, and TLM, and maybe other hash types in the future. When finished, the tables are totally free to download by torrent or HTTP. If for some reason downloading 500 gigabytes of tables is too much or too expensive for you, you can also order a hard disk and support the project that way. Using the Berkeley infrastructure also freed developers' time for further improvements in the way we generate table tables, creating tables based on dictionaries, or even using the power of NVIDIA cards by using a CUDA client However, this is just work in progress at the moment. The table the project is currently working on is an LM table. We are using characters from code pages 437 and 850, which you can see here. And this is going to be the first LM table, which includes accents and German umlauts. Once this table is finished, you are not going to need any other LM table again. Since we are talking about rainbow tables here, if you are wondering how much bandwidth you need, at the moment, the result of a single task is a file about 9 megabytes large, and when it's finished, you will have to upload that. And as you see here, this quad core completes the task on one of his cores every 1.5 hours. A core to Duo, which you might find in a notebook, will complete one on his cores every 3 hours. And the EPC that so many people seem to like, the basic model, I think takes about a day. Well, if you want to use the rainbow tables, you will need rcraci from the site. You can also find a multi-threaded version on the forums and hints how to compile it on Linux. Basically, for this project, the forums are your main source of information. If you have any questions, any troubles, just check there. And of course, your feedback, ideas how to generate tables, what tables to generate, is of course welcome. If you check the Lightning Talks page and click on my name, you will also find that I prepared some links for you on my user page. So, if you have some spare CPU cycles or a CPU which is idle the most time of the day, we kindly invite you to help to generate some nice and free rainbow tables. Well, that's it already.
So, thank you, Stefan. You're the first who didn't get until 4 minutes, so congratulations on that. The next talk will be introducing Artzilla. Please.
Yeah, hi everybody. My name is Aram, and this is TBX, aka Toby. And yeah, we will present two Firefox add-ons today, and the Toby will explain the Artzilla platform. This is a piece we did, yeah, we work more as artists than maybe as technical people, but anyway, so this is a piece by the two of us and Evan Roth. It's an add-on for the Firefox browser, which enables you to surf the Chinese web from here. So as it says over there, experience the sense of Chinese internet from home. There are quite some projects out there for the Chinese people to avoid the Chinese firewall, and they're very brilliant, and I assume there are a lot of people here in the audience who know more about the Chinese web than we do, but we thought it was a good idea to bring that experience of censorship to us or to the West or to the rest of the world. And also it's just a way of showing that the internet is not the same everywhere. There are several countries out there who censor the internet, and China is the biggest one, of course. Part of the piece is an installation which has two computers running on one keyboard and one mouse, so you have a clone, kind of cloned keyboard, and you can experience here what happens on the left, on the right side. So this was shown in Hong Kong in October, and visualized by the flags, you can see these differences and what happens. And of course, when you dig into certain topics, your connection will be disrupted, and the tool is built on, Toby did build the tool on switch proxy. Yeah. So I think that's for China channel.
Okay, then I'm going to show you the next one. Some people might have seen it already. We released this 4 weeks ago, and it's a Firefox add-on that inserts a download for free button on Amazon.com, which links to a corresponding BitTorrent found on the PirateBay.org. So this is how it looks like. It checks for categories, it checks for the one with the most seats, and then it adds it, and then you can also get more information and find other interesting products and just download them for free or add to shopping cart, like you can decide. And so we put this online in, the day after we got a letter from Amazon lawyers.
and so we had to take it down, but it made quite some press, so like it was on Wired magazine and New York Times. And yeah, let's click on Artzilla. So and we make all kinds of Firefox add-ons, and there's already many people making like cool stuff. And once I tried to get another add-on called the Time Machine on Erweiterungen.de, which is the German main big thing, like add-ons Mozilla.org, and they rejected it, and they were saying, no, this is useless, this is art, this is not, we don't support this. So then we decided to get the domain artzilla.org and try to host more experimental Firefox add-ons. And we just started it. We had a little launch party in Rotterdam recently. And I got some flyers here left. I will just put them here if anyone is interested. And yeah, I think that's it. Thanks.
Thanks. You are the second talk who didn't need 4 minutes. So I don't know what's happening here, but I like it. So, we still have 30 minutes left, and the next speaker's already here. We welcome Mario again on the stage. We will see you tonight too?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, he talks about the free software community in Asia, in German or in English language?
In English.
In English, okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Is it going? Okay. Hi. Maybe increase to 5 seconds. Maybe it's too slow. Okay, no problem. Hi. So I'm Mario. Some of you saw me yesterday with LXDE, which is a project from Taiwan. And I'm talking about the community in Asia. I've been working with free and open source, like focused with Asia for the last 3 years, more or less. And work with the Fosbridge, one EU-funded project, and I met many people from Asia, and so I got involved with them. And it's exciting what's going on there. I always meet people who say, nothing's going on in China, and there are no people contributing to open source projects. And actually, there are a lot of open source people in Asia and a lot of people contributing, but they speak Chinese. So we don't know them, or in Vietnam they speak Vietnamese. So I visited them, and for instance in Taiwan, I wanted to stay 2 weeks in Taiwan, and I ended up staying several months. Okay, so what is the community about? It's not only about development, it's, they have a lot of activities, they meet for lunch, we make excursions. For instance in Taiwan, we are drumming every Saturday in the park. Djembe. So that's really cool, and I liked it. This is the Taiwan. As you can see, it's a really busting place, and companies like ASUS get involved, and we're very happy that we also have some organizations now. They are supporting free and open source. For instance, it's Open Foundry here. It's the Chinese Academy of Arts there. Supports software freedom, and they also have girls there. I thought, like, cool, right? I asked Ellie, this is Ellie, so what do you think about the freedom open source? And Ellie said, well, actually, I just want to change the code and I want to change the design. I don't know so much. But, you know, so she doesn't think so much about it, but she lives it, right? She lives software freedom, and, she changed the design, and she thinks LXDE, for instance, looks much too technical, so she wants to change it, and that's what freedom is all about. Here, also many people, of course, involved in hardware. We also have these people there. I met some students here, and these students have a project. They went to Ghana. For 2 months with some EPCs, and actually we even got some EPCs with Windows, but of course we deleted this. It's much too slow and too complicated, and they brought it to Ghana, and they learned a lot about it themselves, and it's great to see this kind of exchange. Other people I met in Beijing, I went there, I didn't know so much about it. Then I saw the community there has 850 people. I'm like, wow, you know, amazing. And they had the GNOME Asia Summit recently. They always have events going on. And they supported me a lot, like organized a lot, brought me in contact with the students, and put me also in touch with other people where I was traveling around. For instance, Shenzhen. I don't know who knows Shenzhen. It's a really big city with, like, nobody knows, maybe 10 million people. And right next to Hong Kong. Okay, thank you. Well, I can talk for hours about it, but what I want to tell you is when you travel around, look on online, go to the Linux communities, meet the local people. Let's start an exchange really in order to make free and open source software a success. We need the global community, and the global community is already there. We just have to connect with each other, and that was what I'm trying to do. Get in contact with me if you want to have more information. I'm also publishing video that I've done, and it's on Perspective 89. Perspective 89, we tear the wall down 89, so it's a big, like, very important in my life. I'm from Berlin, and also have other websites here, Global Freifunk Community, LXDE, a lot of things to check out. Talk to me. We need to bring everyone together, and we can solve a lot of problems. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mario. Good teamwork. You didn't meet each other before, and they decided to share a machine, and I think you've done a really good job. Now we see Mathis again with Wikinet. Some people already know this, so please introduce Wikinet to us.
Okay, may I interrupt? Just a reminder for you watching the stream. There's an IRC channel there. You can look up the information in the wiki. There's a page on IRC, and the channel is on the freenode.net, and it's 25c3-zal2. So please give us your information, or please join if you haven't joined yet. I'm not sure whether the donation box is still going around. We were asking for your pennies, for your cents. Do not put euros in it. And we would like to donate the result to AK Vorrat for their SIM cards action, for their SIM cards
project.
Project, thank you. Also, a reminder, we will have lightning talks again this evening, 8:30. But not in this room, in the other room, at Saal 3, in room 3. Yet another 10 talks there for you. And I hope you will be giving us some feedback on this. Yes, and if anyone has seen the presentation PC we were supposed to get, please let us know, because we're trying to set this up. Everyone here who hears that as a speaker for tonight, please send us your slides. And maybe we can actually get this presentation PC running by then.
Okay. Yeah, I'm very sorry. I don't get the VGA out working. the local names breakthrough, I called it. I've been working on a concept of how to connect wikis and pass information about wikis among wikis. Who helps where? What is the community presenting to the public. Now, recently, in October, there has been the discovery that I have been before using something called clean linking, that's kind of wrapping up the URL with something nicely readable. Lion Kimbrough made up local names in 2004, and that makes the whole process of hiding the URL and having a nicely readable name for a page into one page called local names. So it's all happening on that page local names, else you just put double parentheses around the word and it makes a link within the wiki and to other wikis. In October, Alex Schröder introduced the instant shared local names. That means that the wikis in a wiki hive, a wiki hive is one wiki, and the wikis within it are kind of sub-wikis. The local names of the sub-wikis are passed to the main wiki, and the main wikis exchange their local names. That has a consequence that writing a link on one of the wikis within the WikiNet and having that link in the local names of that that wiki, it is passed through the cache, and after somewhat 3-4 hours, naming the name of the wiki in double parentheses creates a link within every wiki to any other wiki. So it turns all into one big namespace. Second thing I have been recently working on is an integration of Twitter or Identica into wiki. That makes it possible to send a Twitter or Identica message with a certain hashtag into the sidebar of a wiki. And the other way around, I have recently been trying to make Twitter or Identica accounts for wikis using something called Twitter feed. That works very nicely, so you can as well follow a wiki, recent changes in a Twitter or Identica account, and as well you can send a message into the sidebar of the wiki by using the hashtag that the wiki uses. Well, these are two things, and I'm very sorry I didn't get that going here, I couldn't show you. You find a link on the Lightning Talks page for the Kabul Wiki Hive, where these experiments are going on, and Googling Kabul Wiki takes you to any of these wikis. I get whatever changes there, so if you want to contact me, write on the wikis. Just click Edit Today's Talk. Thank you very much.
So, Mattis, don't be sad. I think we get a glimpse of your project, and we can talk to you on the Congress. You're still here. So, is Steve from Hackerspace Luxembourg still already in the room, or is he missing again? Okay. Then we have Konrad with Product Transparency, and Aaron shares his machine again, so thanks for helping us out with the machine. And the stage is yours, Konrad. Go ahead.
Thanks again. Just a second. Okay, this seems to work now. Hello, everybody. My name is Konrad Förstner, and I would like to introduce you to a project I recently started, which is called Product Transparency. What is all this about? So, there are so-called strategic consumers out there, and maybe you are one of those, who want to make the world a better place by consuming more selectively. For example, just buying organic food or fair trade food or fair trade materials or vegan products. And there are, for example, people who are sick, so they are allergic to certain things and have to avoid them or won't avoid them. The problem is this information about the products is not really out there. It's not, you can find it out there. And you need to consume selectively, you need the ingredients, you need to know how this stuff is produced. And our aim is basically to make people, or to make it possible to people to share this information, to make this available in an open, free, and decentralized, so non-silo way. How are we going to do this? So basically, we want to take the name of a product, get the EAN, which is the number that is encoded in the barcode projects, take the ingredients list and the certificates like bio in German or vegan or fair trade. This data can be contributed preferably actually by the producers, but maybe everybody else can contribute in a wiki way. We use semantic web technologies to store this data and to share this data, and we want to use a Creative Commons license, the attribution license, to make also the to give the legal foundation to share all this. And later on, if this data is available, basically everybody, we or you, whoever, can build kind of search engines or whatever, play around with this kind of data. The current status, we're playing around to with Freebase, and if you know, Freebase is a web platform to build ontologies and save data or store data there, and we are developing the ontologies there and trying to, if we can model the reality so that it's usable in a way. So currently we're in limited to the ingredients and producers and certificates, playing around with this stuff. Also there are legal issues to solve, which is not clear so far. Do we have to ask everybody for permission, or can everybody enter basically the data when you take a Mars bar and write the ingredients into example Freebase, which is just a current platform, by the way. There's lots of stuff to do. We have to finish and test these ontologies, run case studies, activate community, which I hope to do right now, and we have to find producers who have nothing to hide, and it's also in their interest, because if people have nothing to hide, then they get more customers who are really who trust them and buy their products. That's it already. I want to thank some people, Melly, Tim, Jens, and you for being here. If you want to have more information, you can find this on the website. It's still growing, and I'm happy to get any feedback from you. I'm downstairs in the OpenBSD booth, and otherwise just send me a mail that you can find the address, can you find on the website. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Konrad, thank you. And again, thanks for sharing the machine to Aaron and Tobias. So, if Steve with hackerspace.lu doesn't show up, we are finished before time, thanks to four speakers who are not using all the 4 minutes. So that's a first in our Lightning Talk history. Albert, yeah.
Well, we still have time to kill, so if you have something to say, please come up to the stage and please point out your project. So, how about you? Yeah, there you go. Okay. So, we have more people.
So, while you prepare your machine, you could just tell us what you're talking about, or suspense factor?
So it's like 10 more minutes, so could be 2, could be 3 talks. Think about it. Let us know. Get ready. Get your slides out, you know? And basically, it's all fine without slides. So if you just come up on stage, present your name, tell us about your project and where to find you, how to get in contact, that's all good. Okay?
So, and if you're a speaker, please add all the information into the wiki page about Lightning Talks if you still haven't done this, so people can call you on the DECT system here at the Congress or get in contact after the Congress. And that includes you, so please include your information after your talk. Go ahead.
Yes. So, maybe I talk about this. This was a Lightning Talk I held in Vienna. I've been there in November, and I've talked several times about the Neo layout, so check it out in the videos from last year or anywhere, and maybe today I talk about a little other thing. So I thought about, hey, you have to type every time in, you type a GPG receive key, and then you have to put the ID, or you make search key or anything. Wouldn't it be cool if we had a machine readable visiting card, business card? So Yes, so the normal visit card is business card is not cool enough, and if you compare fingerprints, it's not good. So we have a solution, a little bit like our ID card. And there are some standards. For example, the standard ISO 7810, which is used for these small credit cards. And maybe one can find some other standards. So, for example, the code 128. And yes, wouldn't it be cool? We have such things on our business card, which is mainly the fingerprint. And you can go to your computer, and maybe you have a scanner, and you make beep, and you have the fingerprint inside. You don't have to compare it and to type it in yourself. Yes, then we have the data matrix code, which is standardized anywhere. Maybe some hacker has a 2D barcode reader, and he has it on his computer and makes, he has a webcam and he holds it before the webcam and then has a cool program to decode. Yes, then we have this machine readable zone. I have seen the keyboards where you can make so and then you have this inside. So there's a standard of it. Where's my key here? So this is for the identification. This is Germany. This is the ID. So then the name, and down there is the fingerprint, and here is the checksum. So everything is standardized. Very great. So, and that's it. Hey. So I have some printed out. Everybody who will sign my key, I give one. And yes, because we have something on the back side, and it's free, so what can we do? Yes, we put the whole key on it in an OCR font, so machine readable until the end. You can put it on your scanner and read it with OCR if you are anywhere where you have no internet. Okay, that's it.
Okay, thanks, Benjamin.
Thank you very much. Yes, and please, if there's anyone else, step on the stage right now. Do we have the adapter?
Yes.
I think we do somewhere. Yes, please come on stage. And is the box of pennies still here? Yes. So I hope you understood it's just opt in, not opt out.
Which one is it?
Anyway, we're donating for the AK4 art for the anonymous SIM card project. And let's see, they probably hate us for counting the pennies then. Right, how's the time? Like 5 minutes left?
Does anybody has DVI on VGA?
Oh, here comes the adapter, yes. Cool.
Okay. That's the small ones too, I like mine. DVA to VGA? Okay. Yeah. Always keep the adapter with you. So, that was the second...
Hey, we got one more.
Oh, okay.
One more try there for this guy.
So, you go on the stage, prepare, and hurry a little bit, because now we are running out of time. And I remind the rest of the audience that we have tonight the third session, so 8:30. At the room 3, Saal 3, just this level, just the room over there. And tomorrow we meet again in the morning, 11:30 in this room. So tonight at that room and tomorrow on this room. And now we have our last lightning talk.
And?
Like and pray.
Okay, time is
running. I think we have a slide. Great.
Okay, I wanted to tell you a little bit about cryptology. Sorry about that. I come from cryptographic community, and I do research in cryptography. So there's already a talk in this conference about Keylock. So the funny thing is that, you know, you have open source cryptography, such as AES or DDS. Keylock was sold for $10 million. I don't know if you have realized that. Proprietary cipher, very, very weak. Should have a security level comparable to DES. Well, it doesn't have. The funny thing is also that there are challenges for cryptographic algorithms. For example, $70,000 for RC5. Okay. But $10 million is really a lot. I don't want to describe the cipher for you. It's a very simple block cipher with basically one Boolean function that updates one bit at a time. But there's a lots of rounds. There are more than 500 rounds in this cipher. So it's a repeating many, many times the same very simple operation in which one new bit is created. Just overview of attacks. There are kind of three categories of attacks. Attacks in which you have like one or two known plain texts. Actually, it cannot be one because the key size is twice bigger than the block size. Basically, with one known plain text, you don't have enough information to even characterize the key. So it can be at least two. Category two is 2 to the power 16 known plain text, and category three is 2 to the power 32 known plain text. So this is actually, given the block size is 32 bits, this is actually like the whole dictionary of the keylog cipher. So there are these three categories. And I just wanted to stress the fact that there is a lot of different attacks on keylog now. And, you know, from the hacker's perspective, the one attack will work is the brute force and the improvements of the OAuth. But from the cryptographic point of view, there are many, many different attacks and many different attack scenarios that are very interesting. And I think I have now like 12 different attacks on keylog. And they are all very, 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 very different, and we are studying these. I'm at UCL, maybe you have noticed, it's University College London, and we have an MSc in Information Security. And we also have a new MSc that is starting next year, which is Information Security Management. So if you want to come to study in the UK, why not? Study with me. I will really skip the attacks. There are attacks with governor bases and Minisat. Terribly smart beasts, these automated systems that break ciphers. Basically, almost any cipher that's simple enough is just broken by these things. Actually, up to 160 rounds of keylog can be broken directly just by running the software, and it's an open source software. Brute force, according to undisclosed sources like Russian Mafia, can be done in days with FPGAs. Self-similarity attack presented at ESCAR conference in Hamburg very recently. It speeds up a little bit the brute force. There is several versions. Here is a summary. I will skip the summary, but there are different versions of this attack. So this is like saving the carbon footprint of the spooks or of the criminal organizations, just doing brute force with less power, less just going slightly a little bit down. That's a very interesting topic. Second category, 2 to the power 16 known plain text. Well, we are the first actually to find a very interesting attack of this kind, but later Biham Dunkelman and Prenel, they found a really, really nice attack published in Eurocrypt 2008, which is better, faster, but the same category. And finally, the best category is 2 to the power 32 known plain text. It's a bit a lot, okay? You cannot really expect a smart card to give you this many plain text. But then the attacks get really, really fast. So I will skip. We have several attacks published and several still not published. The fastest is 2 to the power 23 in computation. So the attack is really, really much faster than actually, it's faster than getting the data that you need to do the attack. And also, I broke another automobile cipher, which is HiTAC 2. This is not yet published. The paper is here. It's being circulated to some people. But I didn't do any experimentation on HiTAC 2. So if somebody wants to experiment with the attack, please contact me. I can help. Basically, I can just break it faster than exhaustive search, so it's faster than brute force. The HiTAC 2, very popular automobile and building cipher. Thank you very much.
So, what was your name again?
My name?
Yeah.
Yes, Nicolas Courtois.